This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show. We take you around the globe, one country at a time. And tonight we have Dean.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm not bad, thank you.
It's like a kiln outside. Oh, now I know what a clay pot feels like.
It's a bit more comfortable inside here, thankfully. We have Damien.
Hello.
And myself, Paul.
Tonight, we are acknowledging and celebrating International Women's Day. Each year, March 8 is a day marked around the world to celebrate the political and social achievements of women while reflecting and agitating for further improvements in rights. But what makes some countries more successful than others in the drive for equality for women? Are there some international success stories that we can learn from here in Australia? And what is the next battle on the women's rights horizon?
In the search for what is at the heart of women's activism, we look to some of the leading women of the world, including Tara Shetty from the Fijian Women's Rights Movement, Robin Tyler, a comedian and longtime US activist, and Chloe Ziegen, writer and anti-femphobia activist based in Germany. Here is a taste of what we have coming up for you tonight.
Fiji is quite unique in the Pacific in that it has a rather incredibly vibrant women's movement that has been active probably since the late 60s, early 70s through till today in its kind of changing form. So that's definitely impacted the way that women are able to take up certain roles.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
This week we're starting off in China. Now, quite a few interesting developments there. LGBT content will no longer be shown on Chinese TV screens. That is right. They have decided it's not going to happen. The China Television Drama Production Industry Association and the China Alliance of Radio, Film and Television issued new TV content production guidelines after a popular gay high school drama was suddenly removed from streaming sites. The alliance claimed the show and all other LGBTI content promotes, and I quote, abnormal sexual relationships and sexual behaviour.
So no more are you being served in Cantonese then?
Well, presumably not. So the ban will also apply to incest and sexual assault. So isn't it nice for same-sex relationships and behaviour to be equated with incest and sexual assault? The document also prohibits TV dramas from showing or promoting an unhealthy concept of marriage, such as extramarital affairs or one-night stands. Boring. What are they going to show on Chinese TV?
It also mentions that you can't do witchcraft. So they can't show Charmed over there?
Well, I do know about that because with a lot of movies, they don't like time travel. That's a big thing in China. A few years ago, they said no time travel movies, which is a problem because it's a plot line that seems to get used by every second movie nowadays. Basically because they don't like the idea of people going back to a pre-communist past.
So Doctor Who is not very popular over there then?
I suspect it's probably not allowed. Anyway, possession, reincarnation, witchcraft practices and feudal superstition, bizarre, grotesque criminal cases, content that has adverse effect on minors, such as love between minors, smoking, drinking and fighting. So pretty much nothing but my restaurant rules from now on, I think.
That, and I think they'll be screening the, if anyone remembers, back to SBS days, the colour bars.
Yeah, that's going back a bit.
But there's a lot of fighting on My Kitchen Rules, so that probably rules that out
as well. Yeah, it probably does, actually. So the news comes because of Addicted, a 15-episode series about a gay high school couple, vanished from the internet without warning last week, and fans were not happy at all. Basically, according to local media reports, censors took issue with the show's depiction of abnormal sexual behaviour, and it became really popular over the Chinese New Year holiday, especially among younger female fans. And the first episode broke records when it was released on January 29 and received 10 million hits in just 24 hours. Now, they did an online poll, but not that that's going to count for anything, and more than 93% of the 20,000 respondents disapproved of the show's removal. And earlier this year, a series of adverts encouraging people to be more accepting of gay people were launched around the country, but even though homosexuality has been removed from China's official list of mental disorders in recent 2001, it still remains a taboo subject.
So this is, you know, sadly a bit of a step back because they're really trying to remove it from the public eye, so it's hard to see how it will advance.
What can you do?
It sounds very similar to that other communist country. Just they haven't yet legislated against it.
That's it.
Over to Nauru, where two gay refugees who fell in love at the Nauru detention camp say they are virtually prisoners in their home, holed up in fear for their lives after being bashed and verbally abused in a nation where homosexuality is illegal. Sadly, the federal government is refusing to rescue the two young Iranian men it sent to a country where they could be jailed for their sexual orientation, according to lawyers. So, yes, unfortunately, the Australian government maintains this position where we are subjecting people to conditions and treatment that we would not tolerate on this land.
But it's in Nauru, so no one cares because it's so far away.
Yeah, so we seem to have this uncanny way of kind of burying that offshore.
It's disgraceful. So both these men fled Iran separately. They met in the Nauru detention camp and love blossomed about 2 years ago, which is great. Unfortunately, Nauru is virulently homophobic. Sexual activity is punishable by, 14 years in prison, I believe. Basically, they've suffered harassment from other detainees while in the centre. They've been beaten up with sticks and things by people in the streets. Unfortunately, Minister for Immigration Peter Dutton has not been particularly interested, and they've offered them, it is not Australian government policy for illegal maritime arrivals to settle in Australia. Refugees in Nauru may apply to Cambodia for permanent settlement. Surprisingly, very few refugees have taken up this option because the nation has been accused of human rights abuses, has high poverty levels, and no refugee resettlement experience. It's crazy.
So apart from that, it's a great idea.
We do have some lighter news. Indonesia, they have created a guide to avoiding gay men, and it's been published in the local newspaper.
Take it away, Paul. Tell us what you've got there.
There are 10 characteristics that they've listed. If you like taking selfies a lot.
Yes, liking to stare at other men's behinds. Yeah, guilty.
If you like staring at men...
Who you like.
Who you like. A guy that cares about his appearance.
Yep, up to date with fashion and smells nice. Well, you know, I think that describes us all. Wears makeup. Mm. That's it. Wears an earring on one of the ears. And I love how it specifies the right ear.
Adores men and, get this, wears V-neck T-shirts.
Yeah, well, no one here is wearing a V-neck T-shirt, so I'm not sure how accurate this list is.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, this is Tara from the Fiji Women's Rights Movement on the Worldwide Wave.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
International Women's Day, originally called International Working Women's Day, is celebrated on the 8th of March every year. In different regions, the focus of the celebrations range from a general celebration of respect, appreciation and love towards women, to celebrating women's economic, political and social achievements. In some countries, the day is a national holiday, and sisters, grandmothers, mothers, women and partners get presents to mark it.
Well, that seems fair enough. I mean, because pretty much every other day of the year is International Men's Day, isn't it? So, you know, day a year for women, that's it.
Started as a socialist political event, it blended into the culture of many countries, primarily in Europe, especially those countries from the previous Soviet bloc. In some regions, the day has lost its political flavour and became simply an occasion for people to express their love for women in a way somewhat similar to a mixture of Mother's Day and Valentine's Day. In other regions, however, the political and human rights theme runs strong, and political and social awareness of the struggles of women worldwide are brought out and examined in a hopeful manner.
Joy, 94.9.
So as for International Women's Day, we've got some extracts from women that we've interviewed previously. First one is Tara Shetty from Fiji. There's a new, strong and dynamic voice rising in Fiji, and it's a female voice. We spoke to Tara Shetty from the Fijian Women's Rights Movement about the impacts that women, particularly young women, are having on both women's and LGBT rights in the Pacific Paradise. We asked Tara what role women historically play in the Fijian society?
Well, historically, Fiji has been a very patriarchal society. And so women are, you know, often confined by the particular gender roles around, you know, caregiving, around not being in leadership or decision-making positions out in the public sphere. So that's sort of the background and the general context. Fiji's a multicultural society. So we've got Indigenous Fijians, and we've also got a large community of Indo-Fijians, and that's quite similar in terms of the way women are placed in those cultures, of course, with the different nuances. And then there's a community, of course, of all mixed different persons.
Has there been a change in the way women are viewed in society?
Certainly.
In modern day society?
Yeah, definitely. Over time, things have changed. I mean, Fiji is quite unique in the Pacific in that it has a rather incredibly vibrant women's movement that has been active probably since the late 60s, early 70s through till today in its kind of changing form. So that's definitely impacted the way that women are able to take up certain roles in the country. And of course, I mean, we're part of the global changing environment, as is all the rest of the Pacific. But I think that kind of vibrant human rights community really has made quite a difference, I think, in the way that in the hard-won gains that we have got over the years.
Would you say that in fact, women are the drivers behind those sorts of changes?
Yeah, I think women play a very big role in terms of the human rights community in general in Fiji and the sort of activism that goes on. Women human rights organisations and the activists that make up part of those networks are very big drivers of those change.
What about sexuality? How does Fijian society view sexuality? Does it get a look in?
Oh, that's a difficult question to answer, isn't it? Because it deals with it in all sorts of different ways.
Is there any presence? Does it get covered in the media? Is there mention or is it sort of underground?
There is mention. Yeah. It's often negative when it comes to the media because we have, you know, part of the kind of patriarchal background to all this is that we have a very strongly sort of Christian culture as well. And there have been traditionally quite conservative attitudes towards sexuality, gender identity. And so, you know, that's informed a lot of the public debate. But I think what has made a difference in how sexuality is discussed to a certain extent is one of the outcomes of sort of the way the HIV pandemic has been dealt with in the Pacific has enabled us to talk about particular forms of sexuality, like men who have sex with men, can be talked about, you know, in a different way now than it could have been 20 years ago. So that's made a difference in terms of that debate. And certainly sort of the women's rights movements and activism has made a difference in how we talk about sexuality, because sexual and reproductive health and rights is a very, very important and kind of forefront of our agenda in general for us as an organisation and for many of our colleagues across the Pacific.
So locally as an organisation, the Fijian Women's Forum, what kind of services do you provide?
The Fiji Women's Rights Movement, my organisation, is part of a broader Fiji Women's Forum. As an organisation, the rights movement, we work a lot on leadership. We have a young women's leadership program. And we also have areas looking at training, human rights training, and looking at research. So those are the sorts of things. As an organization, we're very much about harnessing all of that on the ground experience towards policy and law reform. So we work on that, and then through leadership and empowering young leaders, work on the kind of attitudinal change side of things while lobbying for national or regional or global level policy change.
You've been doing some work with the Melbourne-based International Women's Development Agency. Can you tell us about that project?
Yeah, we're very close partners. We've been very close partners for many years. We've worked together on and off for the last 25 years. And right now, our current work is pretty extensive together. We're working on our Young Women's Leadership Program together. We're also working on a lot of our democratisation work. So as you know, Fiji is a very challenging context at the moment, particularly for anything to do with human rights or women's rights or the rights of LGBTQI persons. So we've been working together on a wide range of things, really, democratisation and young women's leadership being the two most important.
And there is a specific role within those programs about trans people in Fiji?
That's captured within our work around working with the diversity of women. So trans women, you know, have an emerging voice in Fiji at the moment. You know, they've often been very much at the margins, but they have been becoming very organized. And what we've done is working with smaller groups and smaller organizations to help facilitate and to help enable their engagement with wider groups. So the Fiji Women's Forum brings together a lot of different sorts of organizations, some of which coming from a more traditional, perhaps even conservative background, and empowering and enabling that sort of engagement with groups of trans women who are coming to the table, sometimes to these tables for the first time.
Hey, this is Jane Lynch, and you're listening to Australia's gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are listening to The World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show, where tonight we are celebrating International Women's Day. And we've had some messages in. Our regular 317 says, "The great woman of the year for me is Amal Clooney." So that's George Clooney's other half.
She dresses well, that's for sure.
"She's a human rights lawyer that fights with no political bias or nastiness. Her achievements and demeanour are great attributes for any young woman to aspire to. Hope all your mothers are proud of you guys." I think that was for us.
Hear, hear. Barrister mopping the floor of the opposition. How good is that?
Also, congratulations to Sally Goldner, the head of Transgender Victoria, who was this year's winner of LGBTI Person of the Year Award. Congratulations, a fantastic achievement for all transgendered individuals.
Now, the next strong and interesting woman that we're going to be playing tonight is Robin Tyler, USA activist and comedian. She was a fantastic interview. Our next guest is a passionate straight-shooting activist. Robin Tyler is not only a long-time LGBT activist, but was also the first out gay community on US television. We spoke to Robin the day after the historic US Supreme Court ruling to sanction same-sex marriage for all Americans.
My wife and I fought for it in California. Actually, we were the first couple to get married, and it was very, very exciting. It was, you know, people, they say, well, there's no settling for domestic partners or civil unions. It's like marriage segregation. You know, the water fountains, when African Americans had a drink out of a different water fountain, we said, well, after all, it's the same water. Yeah, but what it does is dehumanizes the people that aren't allowed to drink out of the real water fountain. So once you get married, it is absolutely, and everybody said this that I know, even people that were against it or didn't think it was an issue, it absolutely feels like nothing else. It just, you know, when we travel and we go anywhere, and I don't have to say this is my partner because they think law partner, I just say this is my spouse, so she's, you know, this is my wife, and it feels wonderful. A lot of people are afraid that because we can get married, we'll assimilate into heterosexual society, right? And the fact is, civil rights has never equaled assimilation. We can all be magnificent and still have civil rights. I talked about on television, they said, how do you feel? And I said, all the young men that died of AIDS whose families came in and wouldn't allow the partner to come to their funeral or visit in the hospital or took all of the possessions, the tens of thousands of men that had to be not only lose their lover or lose their partner, but lose everything else because they had no legal recognition. And so I think legal recognition of our relationship is very important, and it feels absolutely fabulous.
You've fought for a lot of things over many, many years. Even 10 years ago, did you think that you would see same-sex marriage legalized in the US in your lifetime?
Yes, I absolutely did. A lot of people were saying, look, the Supreme Court gave us marriage. Nobody gave us anything. We fought for it. Nobody is going to give you anything in Australia, anywhere. There's an old joke, you know, of mine. A woman walks into a dentist's office and he goes to drill her teeth, and she grabs him by the balls and says, now we aren't going to hurt each other, are we, doctor? So that's my kind of politic. No, the Supreme Court of the United States did not give us marriage rights. This movement was led and forced by grassroots people. But what we did is we went to courthouses all over the United States. Diane and I have been going since 2000 and asking to get married and getting turned away. As we started demanding that, it grew and grew and grew. So when there was just maybe six of us one year, the next year they'd be 25, and the next year they'd be 250. And so in Australia, it doesn't matter what your opposition says. Keep the pressure up. They'll bend. If you hit a stone long enough, you know, even a stone will crack.
Robin, how did you get your start in activism?
I was in New York and I was a young kid. I had moved from Canada and I went to a drag ball. And drag is when men put on everything that we lesbians refused to wear since we were 3 years old, right? And I went to a drag ball. The drag ball was on the first floor. And on the second floor, I swear to God, was the policeman's convention. So they raided the drag ball and they arrested 44 drag queens and me for female impersonation. and they took us, and all the queens were saying, but that's a girl. She's a girl. And the cops were saying, well, you all call each other girl and Mary. How do we know? So they allowed me one phone call, and I called the New York Post. And the next day, the headlines read 44 men and one woman arrested for female impersonation. So then I got a job. I said, this is great. And I got a job at the 82 Club in New York. And as a female impersonator, this is long before the movie Victor Victoria.
Yes.
And I got a job and I did Judy Garland. And that's how I started on being an activist. And when I was working at the 82 Club, we met drag queens. We also met men that were transitioning. So it's not controversial to me because the waiters would take hormone shots and would have mustaches, but they'd be in love with, you know, the guys on stage, and they'd sleep with the drag queens, and then the waiters, the women waiters with mustaches would be pregnant. I mean, it was very gender bending, and this was in the 60s. So that, and they would chase us home after the show, and people would call us the F word, you know, and so it just radicalized me. But from the time I came out, when I was in Canada, I was 16 years old, and I was best friends with a guy, gay boy. We were the only ones out. We would stand on the corner of Portage and Maine in Winnipeg and hold up a sign saying, gay is good, in 1959. And people thought we meant happy and would give us money. So
it's a new way of busking.
So right from the get-go, I said, no, 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 no. I came out immediately. Not because I was, like, brave. I was stupid. I didn't know people would think it was that sensational. I just thought it was like saying, hello, I'm an Aries. I'm Jewish. I'm a lesbian. And didn't go over well in 59.
Robin Tyler, a activist and comedian from the U.S. and one of our past guests here on World Wide Wave's show about International Women's Day.
The theme this year for 2016 is Planet 50-50 by 2013, stepping up for gender equality.
What are the areas for improvement, Paul?
There are a couple of areas, and well, there are more than a couple.
Classic British understatement there, I think.
One of those is pay or gender parity. So we've still got
nearly a quarter of a billion more women are in the global workforce today than a decade ago, but they're only earning what men did in 2006, according to the World Economic Forum.
And 1 in 10 married women don't actually get consulted by their husbands before he spends their money.
Their own money, by the way, not the money earned by the husband, but the money earned by the poor, long-suffering wife. Ridiculous.
The other area that has been identified is obviously abuse.
Unfortunately, yes.
There is
an increasing awareness of the disproportionate amount of abuse women suffer at the hands of others. An estimated 120 million girls and women under the age of 20 have been subjected to forced sexual intercourse or other forced sexual acts. It's a huge number. And a huge majority of cases involve partners and relatives, and they also go unreported.
And more than a third of women worldwide have experienced physical or sexual violence at some point in their lives. Most commonly, it's between their teenage years and menopause.
Well, there's much food for thought there, and we can only hope that it's going to get better.
This is Ulrike Lunacek, member of the European Parliament and co-president of the Parliament's LGBT intergroup on the World Wide Wave.
You are listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9, where today we are celebrating International Women's Day. And what better way than by speaking to Chloe Ziegen, a German writer and anti-fem phobia activist. Now, while there is widespread acceptance of queer people in Germany, we ask, has discrimination moved against feminine people, both men and women? We ask Chloe what femphobia actually is.
Femphobia is hostility, violence, harassment and negative bias directed towards feminine people.
Why do you think that femphobia exists?
Well, so basically, we live in a sexist, patriarchal society. You only have to look at numbers of women in politics, in leading media positions, in CEO positions, and so on, and the violence against them. And I think that that has translated into femphobia in, I mean, both in environments where overt sexism is kind of frowned upon, so a queer environment or a left-wing environment, there the sexism has just kind of hidden itself somewhat into hostility towards feminine people. And I think because feminine people have a lower hierarchical position, people get away with more, they feel less fearful about directing hostility towards those kind of people. And then in the wider sense, so outside those communities, but also including in those communities, I just think it's straightforward misogyny.
Do you think that there's a difference between femphobia directed towards queer women and femphobia that's directed towards queer men?
Inevitably, yes. I think they're coming from largely the same place, which is an exploitation of hierarchy, and the similarities are probably, God, I don't want to quantify it really. I'm always a bit nervous about doing that, sort of looking for ways they are different. But yes, I mean, I think a feminine man is also kind of having those notions chucked in his face of why would you do that? Why would you move into the feminine space? Why would you not? The Berlin scene is certainly bear dominated, and I'm at the moment gathering testimony on femphobia across the scene and outside the scene also, but I have a lot of men reporting to me the kind of harassment and policing and hostility they feel if they're feminine. And certainly from what I see, there is almost entirely feminine visibility within the kind of, well, within all areas of the scene.
What does femphobia look like in a really practical way on the ground in Germany?
So, I mean, I'm speaking from Berlin, and Berlin has got that little bit of, I compare it to sort of New York in the 70s, in that we're in this kind of little bubble, and I'm a bit nervous of kind of extrapolating out my experience across Germany, because I imagine it's, well, it is pretty different, but practical manifestations of femphobia. So, I mean, it can just be something like hostile glances, people not saying hello to you when you enter a group. It will be people commenting on how you look as if you're not present, certainly kind of on the scene, the sort of party scene, and the fact that the scene is party-centric is kind of part of the problem, I think. But certainly if you go out onto the scene, it'll be a matter of when, not if, you experience femphobic harassment. So these all include even like being physically touched and being told you don't belong there. Other physical manifestations is kind of what you don't see. So you'll look around the room and see a kind of homogeny of the sort of queer uniform, which the main thing on women is the short hair, and that's the social signifier to show, don't worry, we are not feminine. You know, you're one of us if you have this, and if you don't, good luck to you. So another physical manifestation will be you simply don't see femmes. They're in a huge minority. And then, you know, that's reflected in our media. You don't see coverage of events. You know, I see a lot of women doing a lot of work, organising events, blah, 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 but you don't see it in the coverage. The coverage is completely male-dominated.
Chloe Ziegen from Germany, or rather from the UK and settled in Germany, writer and anti-femphobia activist.
And checking a few messages that we've had, thank you for everyone, and one particularly from our co-host Sarah, hope you're feeling better. She says, I'm going to be part of a program to try and readjust gender equality in science, and will be going to Antarctica in 2016.
See what I mean about all our female co-hosts always like just lead these incredibly exciting lives and just that's it, and they never get to stay on the show.
And she's going to Antarctica to get away from us.
No, we are
likable people, really.
We do, like the list from Indonesia said, we smell really good and we wear V-neck t-shirts.
She highlights some of the problems that we were discussing, such as 17% of women having experienced sexual violence since they were 15, 29% physical violence, and, unfortunately, most of these perpetrated by partners. A quarter of Aussie women have been sexually harassed at work, and 155 out of 173 countries have at least one law restricting the rights of women at work. And back here in Australia, women earn a full-time wage of $283 less per week. So it seems we've still got some way to go.
Still a long way to go, yes.
A long way to go. You're listening to Well By Wave here on Joy 94.9.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like Worldwide Wave on Facebook now.
This is Nikki from Canada, where everybody can get married. You're listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Big thank you to all our interviewees tonight. Tara Chetty from the Fijian Women's Rights Movement, US activist Robin Tyler, and Chloe Ziegen, the writer and anti-femphobia activist based in Germany.
We'd also like to thank everyone that's interacted with us on Facebook. Martin, Liz, Cody, Wendy, Kerry, and a hell of a lot more. So we're on W3 Joy on Facebook.
Also, thanks to Robert for keeping the helm at the front desk.
And coming up, the song we're going to be playing out with is another female artist, Katy Perry, with Raw.
Oh, you've all heard this one. Same time next week, everyone.
I used to bite my tongue and hold my breath, scared to rock the boat and make a mess, so I sit quietly.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
So I fell for everything. You held me down, but I got up. Already brushing off the dust. You hear my voice, you hear that sound. Like thunder gonna shake the ground. You held me down.
A little less straight than other radio stations. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.